On recent Sunday evenings, we've been talking about the fall, the way that the first man, Adam, rebelled against God. And we've talked about the ruin which the fall brought to Adam, the way in which his whole existence was blighted and spoiled. And one aspect of that ruin, which we've talked about, was that Adam was ruined as a moral being. Adam had been created good. He had been created holy. He'd been created to be like God in his character. He had been created with a heart full of love. It was natural for him to love God, and it was natural for him to love the creatures around him, and it was natural for him to love his wife Eve. Love sprang naturally from the heart of man, of Adam, before the fall. But from the moment that Adam sinned against God, all that changed. His nature was radically changed. The moment that Adam sinned against God, Adam became a twisted, depraved creature. What was good in him became evil. We saw that even in the opening chapters of Genesis. We saw that in the way that Adam responded to God when God questioned him. God says to Adam, "Have you eaten from the tree that I commanded you not to eat from?" And Adam answered, "The woman you put here with me, she gave me some fruit from the tree, and I ate it." Just reading those words, you see the horrible change that's come to Adam. You see how selfish he's become, how deceitful he's become, how loveless he's become. The man who before he sinned loved Eve is now ready to turn against her, to accuse her, to blame her for his sin. He's ready to hide behind her and invite God to punish her. He's going to use her as his human shield to defend himself against God's wrath. He's become a brutal creature. And a few verses later, God speaks to Eve and says this to Eve: "Your desire will be for your husband, and he will dominate you. He will tyrannize you." Something has changed appallingly about Adam. The man who once loved his wife with a beautiful, other person-centered love is now going to be a man who tyrannizes her, who brutalizes her, who exploits her. Adam's whole nature has been changed. He's been depraved. He's been corrupted. And that corruption, as we saw last week, is not something that came only upon Adam. It is something that comes upon all of Adam's descendants. When Adam sinned, it was not only Adam who sinned. The whole human race sinned in Adam. And the corruption that entered Adam, entered the whole of the human race at that point. Every human being shares the corruption, the depravity, the twistedness that came upon Adam when he fell. You see that in the chapters of Genesis that follow. You see it in the next generation. Cain's murderous jealousy and rage against Abel. Cain's violence, his brutality, finally his murdering of Abel. And then his attempt to excuse himself and cover it up. And then you see how that works out in the generations that follow. Genesis 4:17, Cain lay with his wife and she became pregnant and gave birth to Enoch. Cain was then building a city and he named it after his son Enoch. And to Enoch was born Irad, and Irad was the father of Mehujael, and Mehujael was the father of Methushael, and Methushael was the father of Lamech. And Lamech married two women within just a few generations. Men have become selfish exploiters of women. From natural affection, they're turning and looking for something unnatural. It is utterly unnatural for a man to want more than one woman. Man was created to be bound as one flesh with one woman. But within a few generations of Adam's fall, men are saying, I'm not satisfied, I want more. Lamech marries two women, one named Ardah and the other Zillah. And Ardah gives birth to Jabal. He's the father of those who live in tents and raise livestock. And his brother's name was Jubal. He was the father of all who play the harp and flute. And Zillah also had a son, Tubal-Cain, who forged all kinds of tools out of bronze and iron. These descendants of Lamech are brilliant men. They've got great skills and ingenuity and creativity. They're capable of making instruments out of bronze and iron. They're capable of writing music, of producing songs. One of Lamech's sons is the first musician, the first composer. The sons of Lamech build the first civilization. But look what sort of civilization it is. Lamech says this to his wives. He sings a song in their hearing. Ardah and Zillah, listen to me. Wives of Lamech, hear my words. I've killed a man for wounding me, a young man for injuring me. If Cain is avenged 7 times, then Lamech 77 times. They've only just discovered music, but they're already using their musical ability to write songs of violence, songs of brutality. Lamech is boasting of the fact that he's killed a mere lad. You know, we hear about modern rap songs and how modern rap is full of violence and brutality and incitement to hatred. Lamech was the first rapper. He's boasting about the fact that a lad who dared lay a finger on him was murdered, was struck down. He says, anybody who touches me, I'll revenge myself 77 times over. Somebody hurts me, somebody strikes a blow against me, he'll get 77 back in return. That's how quickly the human race has degenerated. That's how quickly Adam's sin is working itself out through the human race. Each generation shows more obviously the savagery, the brutality, the corruption that's in the human heart. realize there's only a few generations since Adam was walking in the garden with God, filled with love, in a world where there was no taint of cruelty or selfishness. And already, now a few generations later, a civilization is being built on savagery, on hatred, on viciousness. Read on. Come to Genesis chapter 6 and verse 5. See what happens to mankind, to the descendants of Adam. The Lord saw how great man's wickedness on the earth had become, and that every inclination of the thoughts of his heart was only evil all the time. Remember that in these early generations, in this early history of the human race, remember, there was no government. Remember, there was no system of law to restrain people from acting just as they chose to act. Remember that human beings were free to do exactly what came naturally to them. That's why Lamech could boast as he did. Nobody could stop him from carrying out his massacres. Nobody could stop him from taking however many women he wanted. There was no restraint. There was no policing of that society. There was no one who had authority to impose any restraints upon people. People were simply left to work out what they were by nature. And this was the consequence. The Lord saw how great man's wickedness on the earth had become, and that every inclination of the thoughts of his heart was only evil all the time. Do you see the repetition, the emphasis in that verse? Every inclination of the thoughts of man's heart was only evil all the time. And then you've got a further all in verse 11, where you read this: now the earth was corrupt in God's sight and was full of violence, and God saw how corrupt the earth had become, for all the people on earth had corrupted their ways. That was what the human race became when they were simply left to act according to their nature, when there was no restraint put upon them. All the human race became corrupt. And what that corruption meant was that every single thing they did was rotten. Every thought they had, every inclination of the thoughts of their heart was only evil all the time. Can you imagine what society became in those days? Well, there was no society. There was only anarchy. When every man was left to himself, just to do whatever he wanted, lust ruled, and violence ruled, and perversion ruled, and cruelty ruled, and lies ruled. Not one word that men spoke you could trust to be true. Not one thing that men did was truly unselfish. This is God's verdict. He looked at man everywhere. And what does he see? Every inclination of the thoughts of his heart. Only evil all the time. There it is, right at the beginning of the Bible. That terrifying picture of human nature. The evil of the human heart. That depravity which entered human beings through Adam. When that depravity is left to work itself out, it produces lives that are utterly disgusting and that are nothing but disgusting. And society became so utterly rotten that God had to sweep it away in the waters of the flood. Men, women, children, they were all drowned. God had to sweep away the whole human race and make a new start. Because everything had descended into rottenness and shame. There's only been once in human history since the fall when human beings have had all restraint taken away from society. And it was then. And you can see the consequences. That was the test of what man really is like. What man's nature really is like since the fall. What will happen if we just leave human beings to themselves? What will happen if we take away the restraints? This was what happened. Every inclination of the thought of man's heart became evil all the time, so rotten that God had no option but to wash the earth clean in the flood. Now that doctrine, that teaching, which you see so clearly in the opening chapters of Genesis, this teaching that human nature is depraved, is found again and again and again in the Bible. Let me just take you through some of the key verses, some of the verses that sum it up particularly clearly and sharply. Jeremiah chapter 17 and verse 9. The heart, wrote Jeremiah, the heart is deceitful above all things and beyond cure. Who can understand it? The heart is deceitful above all things and beyond cure. Who can understand it? Jeremiah pictures the human heart as incurably deceitful. Every human being is deceitful. Lies just spring up from the human heart. Human nature is a cobweb of lies. We lie to ourselves. We lie to one another. We lie when it suits us, when there's a purpose to lying, and we lie simply for the pleasure of lying. We lie and we know we're lying. We lie and often we don't even think we're lying. Deceitful beyond all things. And incurably deceitful. In Jeremiah's day, a particular king, a well-meaning king called Josiah, a different Josiah, King Josiah. In Jeremiah's day, King Josiah tried to reform the nation. The nation was full of lies and deceits. It was full of idols. It was full of false teaching. And Josiah thought, I'm going to root all this out. I'm going to bring people back to the truth. I'm going to show them again the truth so they believe the truth and act on the truth. And so he passed laws to root out the idolatry and the false religion and the lies that were filling people's hearts. He persuaded the people to draw up a solemn covenant. He made them swear to keep God's commandments. That was a few years before Jeremiah wrote these words. A few years later, Jeremiah looked around him and he said, nothing's changed. People are as evil, people are as twisted, people as deceitful as they ever were. Josiah has tried to cure people of their deceitfulness, but they can't be cured because the heart is beyond cure. There's a rottenness in human nature that can't be cured by legislation or by education or by policing or by national covenants or by good resolutions. Josiah tried all of those things and discovered that the heart is incurably wicked. It's beyond understanding, says Jeremiah. You could spend a lifetime trying to understand the human heart, trying to understand why people should do things that are so evidently, utterly, bizarrely wicked, trying to reach the limits of human wickedness. You could sit down and you could try to think, where are the limits to human wickedness? What are the things that no man or woman would do? You would never reach those limits. There is nothing so evil, so disgusting, so degraded that human beings would not do it. The human heart is beyond understanding. There is no predicting the evil of which human beings are capable. That's what Jeremiah realized. Turn to the New Testament. Listen to the words of Jesus himself. In Mark's Gospel in chapter 7. And verse 20, Jesus went on, what comes out of a man is what makes him unclean. For from within, out of men's hearts, come evil thoughts, sexual immorality, theft, murder, adultery, greed, malice, deceit, lewdness, envy, slander, arrogance, and folly. All these evils come from inside and make a man unclean. What a picture Jesus gives us of the human heart. He pictures it as a cesspit that bubbles up, that spouts out everything that's foul. It's a fountain of evil from which everything that's disgusting springs up naturally. See, Jesus emphasizes that every sort of wickedness, everything that's horrible, starts inside the heart. It's not that a man is corrupted by the environment out around him. The problem for every man is his own heart. It's his own nature. It's from that nature that theft and murder and adultery spring up. You're not allowed to say that nowadays. I was talking to Keith earlier about a particular project which was initiated in one of our prisons. It's a project run by evangelical Christians called Inner Change. Just attempt to bring the gospel to prisoners. And it's had extraordinary results in that prison and among people who have left the prison and who have been followed up since. Because by all accounts, many prisoners have been converted through this program. And after leaving prison, they've stayed free of their crime. They've not gone back to it. But now the prison authorities, the Home Office, the prison service, have closed down this project. And why? Because the prison service psychologist has said this program isn't built on scientific research. This program teaches the people are responsible for their own actions. She said it. She said that according to this Christian teaching, people offend because of their own wickedness. She says that flies in the face of all modern thinking. She wants to believe that if people do evil, it's because their environment is wrong. It's because society is wrong. She doesn't want to believe that there is evil in the human heart. But Jesus tells us clearly that it is out of the human heart that everything unclean emerges. Yes, society may turn on the tap so that the fountain springs forth. But it couldn't spring forth if it weren't there. Jesus tells us that the human heart is appallingly depraved. One of the most sobering verses in the New Testament is just a single sentence spoken by the Lord Jesus in the Sermon on the Mount, Matthew chapter 7 and verse 11. Here Jesus is talking about the goodness of God. And he says this: if you then, though you're evil, know how to give good gifts to your children, how much more will your Father in heaven give good gifts to those who ask him? Notice how straightforwardly Jesus just throws into the sentence the truth that human beings are evil. That's not the point he's making. The point he's making is the goodness of God. But just in the course of talking about the goodness of God, without argument, he simply says, you are evil. He takes that truth for granted. We read earlier Paul's great indictment in Romans chapter 3. Let's look at it again. Paul surveys the whole human race. He talks about Jews who have been brought up knowing God's commandments. They've been surrounded by every spiritual influence all their lives. He talks on the other side about Gentiles who have been left to go their own way with only the voice of conscience to hold them back. And this is his one-line summary. It's in verse 9. Jews and Gentiles alike are all under sin. Not just they are all sinful, but they are all under sin. They're all dominated by sin. They're controlled by sin. They're under sin in the same sense in which a slave is under the master. Sin drives them. Sin dominates them. And then he goes on to give this string of 8 quotations from the Old Testament to drive home that all under sin. Look at the 8 quotations in verse 10 onwards. There is no one righteous, not even one. Well, is he talking only about outward behavior? No, there is no one who understands. He's talking about the way people think inwardly, the very fabric of their mind. There is no one who seeks God. He's talking about their fundamental attitude towards God. All have turned away. They have together become worthless. There is no one who does good, not even one. He's talking about their speech. Their throats are open graves. Their tongues practice deceit. The poison of vipers is on their lips. Their mouths are full of cursing and bitterness. He's talking about their relationships. Their feet are swift to shed blood. Ruin and misery mark their ways. And the way of peace they do not know. He pictures them as totally ignorant of God's way. There is no fear of God before their eyes. Pictures human beings everywhere, all human beings, as having a depraved attitude towards God. Human beings don't naturally seek God. Their only desire is to avoid God, to hide from God, to shut God out from their thoughts. They think they can blaspheme against God. There's no fear of God before their eyes. And again, Paul says in these verses, it's true of all. It's true of all. There are no exceptions, he says. No one righteous. Not even one. No one who understands. No one who seeks God. All turned away. Together become worthless. No one who does good. Not even one. Go on a little further into Romans. Romans chapter 8 and verse 7. One of those verses that's mangled by the NIV. In this verse, in the NIV you have the phrase, the sinful mind. Actually, what the word is in the original is simply the flesh. And when he talks about the flesh, he doesn't just mean the human body, he means human nature in its entirety. And this is what he says, literally. The mind of the flesh is enmity against God. The mind of the flesh is enmity against God. Human nature, he says, and the sort of thinking human nature produces is thinking that is flatly hostile to God. The mindset which is natural to human beings, which comes from their very nature, is a mindset of enmity against God. Human beings naturally think of God as an enemy. Human beings naturally hate God. Again, in this verse, he's not talking about some particular group of blasphemers. He's making a universal statement. However deep it may be buried, however well it's disguised, in their heart of hearts, human beings hate God. And again, just like Jeremiah, Paul emphasizes that this hatred is incurable. He goes on to say the mind of the flesh is enmity to God. It does not submit to God's law, nor can it do so. human nature is so locked into this God-hating mindset that it's impossible, he says, for a human being to be subject to the law of God. It would be going against the most fundamental thing in human nature if a fallen human being, if a child of Adam, were to submit to God's commandments. Every natural human being resents God's commands. It cannot submit to them. And we'll take one last passage, Ephesians chapter 2. Where Paul addresses Christian believers and then reminds them of what they were before they came to Christ. And this is what he says. You were dead in your trespasses, in your transgressions and sins, in which you used to live when you followed the ways of this world. The most fundamental thing he has to say about these people is that they were dead in relation to God. There was not one spark of spiritual life in them. There was no desire for God. There was no love for God. There was no real reverence for God. There was no capacity to see God or hear God's voice or communicate with God or obey God. They were utterly cut off from the life of God. They were dead in transgressions and sins. And then he says, meanwhile, they followed all the corrupt ways of the world. Sins in which you used to live when you followed the ways of this world. And worse than that, you followed the ways of the ruler of the kingdom of the air, the spirit who's now at work in those who are disobedient. He says you were followers of Satan. You lived under the dictates of that spirit who controls the disobedient. The whole pattern of their lives was devilish. It was satanic. They were controlled by an unseen spiritual power. A monstrous, tyrannical power who enslaved them and manipulated them and worked within them. Paul isn't speaking now to a group of people who had been involved in devil worship or who had been demon possessed in some special way. He's saying to all these Ephesian readers, you were controlled by demonic forces. You were all demonized, if you like. And he's not only writing to Gentiles. Even Jewish people who had grown up with every spiritual advantage, they too are included in this. It's a universal statement. He says, verse 3, all of us, he's writing as a Jew, also lived among them at one time, gratifying the cravings of our flesh and following its desires and thoughts. So, he says, we followed the ways of the world. We followed the agenda of demons. But in doing that, we weren't acting unwillingly. We were also following our own nature. We were carrying out the desires of our own flesh. This is what we wanted to do. This is how we wanted to be. We wanted to live this worldly, demonic, evil way. In short, we were, and this is Paul's punchline, by nature, objects of wrath like the rest. Paul says, by our very nature, we were the sort of creatures who deserved God's anger. If Paul had written, we were objects of wrath because of the way we'd behaved, that would have been one thing. But Paul doesn't say that. He says we were children of wrath by nature. Our very nature, the nature we inherited in Adam, our nature was such as to provoke God to disgust and hostility. Our nature was such that it called for God's holy judgment. Who's Paul talking about? He's talking about us. He's talking about our neighbours. He's talking about our friends. He's talking about our brothers and our sisters. He's talking about our employers. He's talking about our children. What does God see when he looks at every human being? He sees creatures who are by nature objects of wrath. Forget what people have actually done. Forget what they've said. Forget what their lives have been or haven't been. And simply ask, what are they by nature? What's the final truth about what they're like inside? And Paul answers, their very nature is such that it moves God to anger and disgust. They are objects of wrath by nature. Tonight, when I go home, I'll take my baby daughter into my arms. She's lovely. I'm lucky, she'll look up at me and she'll smile and she'll chuckle. She's beautiful and she has an evil nature. By nature, she's an object of wrath. She may grow up to be a nice girl, or she may grow up to be obviously a vicious girl. You know what I'm praying for. But whatever she turns out to be in terms of outward character and behavior, the truth is that by nature, she's an object of wrath. She has a heart that is deceitful above all things, incurably wicked. And your children are no different. You know, a man may adopt a tiger cub. And a tiger cub is a lovely little thing. He can romp with his little tiger cub. He can play with it. It's playful. It's charming. Bigger, more beautiful kitten. What's its nature? It has the nature of a tiger within it. It has the nature of a voracious, savage beast within it. That's what it is by nature. Forget what it is by appearance. Forget what it is in terms of its outward habits. We're talking about its nature. And by nature, it's a brute. Your children are tiger cubs. They have within their hearts the seed of savagery and brutality and cruelty and viciousness. They're little serpents. They have within them the capacity, the seed of lies and deceits and every poisonous word. And by nature they have within them hearts that hate God. That's true for children. It's true for toddlers. It's true for babies. It's true for elderly folk in the nursing homes. I go into the nursing homes and I sit and talk to lovely, sweet old folk. And they're so gentle and so pleasant. Again, what is there behind that? What's there beneath that surface? What are they by nature? Yes, there's been a restraint put upon them. Yes, God has held back the forces of wickedness within them. They've been trained by their upbringing to be nice outwardly. What are they by nature? They're objects of wrath. Within every human being there is the seed of every sin. You can't change human beings, young or old, by educating them. You can't change them by psychoanalyzing them. You can't change them by changing their environment. Their nature must be changed. Do you remember the words we read right at the beginning of the service? God's words to his chosen people. This is what he says. I will sprinkle clean water on you, and you will be clean. I will cleanse you from all your impurities and from all your idols. I will give you a new heart and put a new spirit in you. I will take from you your heart of stone and give you a heart of flesh. No other hope but that. Nothing else will save our children. Nothing else will save our neighbours. Nothing else will save those elderly folk in the nursing homes but that miracle. The miracle of God himself taking away a stone heart, a hardened heart, a wicked nature, and putting in its place a living heart, a heart that loves him and is drawn to him, a heart that trusts Christ and hates sin. Do you feel at times that it's hard to get people converted? It's not hard to get people converted. It's impossible to get people converted. It's impossible to get through to ears that are deaf and to hearts that are stone. It's impossible to get children converted. It's impossible to get old folk converted. It would take a miracle. But God says there will be such miracles. God says that he will. He will call his elect. He will take away the stony hearts. And he will give living hearts of flesh. Some of us can say he's done that for us. We were by nature children of wrath. And yet he saved us. And we pray that we'll see him doing that for our children and for countless people around us. With God, all things shall be possible.